helping realtors on Vancouver Island stay connected, current, and on the cutting edge. This is the Vancouver Island Real Estate Show. Here's your host, Braden Wheatcroft.
Everybody, this is the Vancouver Island Real Estate Show. I'm your host, Braden Wheatcroft. Super excited to be here with you today. I'm broadcasting to you live from the RE/MAX Camosun office in beautiful Langford, out on the West Shore here, right on the Strip where it all happens. And we've got a really interesting show for you today. If you've been following the advertisement and the promotional content leading up to today, you know that we're here to talk about electric cars. EVs, as they're often referred to, electric vehicles. And we're going to come at it from the perspective of, you know, of course, you, the audience, Vancouver Island Realtors, and whether or not electric vehicles are actually practical for you to own as your daily driver in your day-to-day business. And we've got the best possible guest, the authority in this space, a guy that I've become pretty good friends with here over the last year. If you don't know this already, I actually own an electric vehicle. I bought a BMW i3. From this gentleman that we have on today, Julian Sale, and he's here to talk about all things EV. So before I bring him on, just a quick little intro for him. So Julian got into the automotive industry at age of 14. I think that's called child labor. In 1991 at Victoria Honda Suzuki. And in 2007, many years later, he decided to get out in business for himself. He actually started a business called Motorized Auto Direct. That was in 2007. By 2015, he actually did a bit of a pivot in his business where they actually switched to an exclusive EV dealership. My understanding is it's one of Canada's very first exclusive EV dealers, which is pretty exciting to know that that's here home on Vancouver Island. And the cool thing about his business that I really like is it's a family business. He worked with his sister and his oldest son, Josh, in the business. I've actually had interactions with all three of them through my buying process, and it was a lot of fun I'm looking forward to bringing Julian on here. So please, everyone, join me in welcoming Mr. Julian Sale. Julian.
Morning.
How are you, man?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, you look very relaxed for a guy who wasn't able to log on to the broadcast here for until 2 minutes before we went live. Where are you coming from?
I'm coming from beautiful West Shore as well. I'm actually sitting in McDonald's on the Galwood Strip right now.
Oh, man. Shout out to McDonald's in Colwood. Fantastic.
You know what? The coffee's good. So what can I say?
Well, that's debatable, but, you know, to each their own. So, hey, man, I really appreciate you being here. I have to say, I probably get asked about my electric vehicle. I'm not exaggerating. Probably twice a week. It's usually around the charging station. If anyone is near me when I'm about to unplug or plug in my car, they always look. I look over, I kind of smile because I try to be friendly to everybody. And then they pause and then they walk over to me and start asking me questions about my vehicle. How long have I had it? Do I like it, etc. Yeah. You must get that all the time.
It's a hot topic for sure. And I think, you know, electric vehicles were I don't know, a little twinkle in everybody's eye 10 years ago. You know, Chevy had an EV1 back in the 90s. And electric vehicles have been a point of discussion at the dinner table occasionally here and there, but all of a sudden since Nissan dropped the Leaf in 2011 and they started to become a little more mainstream, and you can't drive through town without seeing a whole bunch of EVs, people are noticing, so people are talking and people want more information. So the community and the business world in general is hungry for information. And sometimes you go online and you can only get so much information. You don't know what's real and what's not. So contacting an EV owner at a charge station is the perfect intersection of information, because you can talk to a real person who owns a car and you can ask real questions and get real answers.
One of the things I've noticed is you're right about the community. It's it's kind of entering a cult. You didn't warn me about that when I bought the vehicle, but
sorry.
You know, us EV owners definitely want to stick together.
Oh, for sure.
I want to ask you about that decision, because obviously you're talking to an audience that are real estate entrepreneurs, you know, business planning, strategy, marketing. These are all parts that go into our business. And I want to ask you about your own business for a moment. So you originally founded Motorized back in 2007, and then it was 8 years later you decided to do what I would imagine was a pretty big pivot from going from a pre-owned auto dealer to a exclusive EV dealer. Can you maybe tell us a little bit more about, why did you decide to do that? What was that like from you, just from one business owner to another?
Well, there's a backstory. Okay, so when I went into business for myself, I had cut my teeth in the motorcycle world. Victoria Honda Suzuki was a motorcycle dealer. And I was always involved with motor vehicles of one sort or another. But when I went into business for myself, I didn't want to sell trucks and SUVs. I was commuting from Souk to Sydney for a long time. So efficiency was the name of the game. And so I was always focused on hybrids and what we thought at the time were clean diesels. So that was what we leaned on. And in 2012, I had a consumer. We also did a lot of brokerage and bringing cars in for people, which included luxury cars and sports cars and all sorts of stuff. But regardless, we had a customer that came in and said, listen, I've been watching these Nissan Leafs. I got to have one. Can you get me one? And we couldn't get a Leaf in Canada. The local Nissan dealer didn't have any. In fact, you couldn't find a Leaf anywhere in Canada or any other EV for that matter. So we imported one for a customer from Seattle, and I drove the car for about 5 kilometers. I picked it up at C-SPAN by the ferry and drove it to my store in Sydney, and it literally changed my world. I knew immediately that was the way that we had to go. Wow. So for a couple of years, like that was in 2012, and for a couple of years, I tried to get as many of those as I could, and I was supplying other dealers with used Nissan Leafs because they didn't have access. So we sort of cut our teeth in the EV world back in 2012. But we decided to switch exclusively over to EVs when we had enough supply that we could actually integrate that into our business model. Until 2015, 16, there wasn't enough supply. I couldn't get enough inventory.
Yeah.
And you know what that's like, being short on inventory, don't you?
I have no idea what that's like. Uh-huh. Yeah, no, for sure. Well, and that's fascinating. So I definitely believe that you want to have a competitive advantage, a point of differentiation. So I imagine, you know, putting your flag in the ground and saying, okay, we only do EVs, this is our thing. Like that's both a strength and potentially a weakness. Like has your business done since you've decided to just specialize?
Well, you know, I always wanted to specialize. I know there is a niche market available to exploit and to grow. And I thought that EVs were it. I potentially could accuse myself of being too early in this adventure because we have had some major setbacks with respect to inventory shortages and recalls and a bunch of other funny stuff that I could not have planned for. But at the end of the day, I'm following my moral compass here, and I want to sell a product that's not only socially but economically and environmentally responsible as well. So I could have made more money if I had stuck to gas cars, but I'm not in it for the money, I suppose. We're profitable now, and it's a great business model now. But
that's why you drink McDonald's coffee, Julian.
I save $3 a day.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. No, I think you stick to it long enough, and I mean you've positioned yourself so well for the change, because it is happening. Like, holy smokes, I can't believe the amount of the major dealers, whether it's Volkswagen or BMW or these other brands out there, which we're going to talk a little bit later, and they're all saying, like, the dates I'm hearing are 2020, 2025, like it is, it's here. That's not that far away. So you're well positioned. And then,
yeah, you got to think long-term, and the long-term trend is moving towards electric. Even for people who say, oh, I'm not interested in an electric car, and I said, that's okay, you will be. So yeah. if they're not my customer today, they will be soon.
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons maybe why I was attracted to electric cars was I've always been a bit of a techie guy. I've enjoyed technology, whether it's, different smartphones or different cameras or gear, things like that. And so the electric cars have always seemed like they're kind of like a techie's vehicle, right?
Absolutely.
But the problem with technology, as you know, is like that old cliche, like by the time you, unbox your new
phone,
it's outdated. And then there's also that concept of like, by the time you drive your car off the lot, it's also lost value. So like,
absolutely. Those are real considerations.
And how does that relate to electric vehicles from your experience? Like, what have you noticed in the last 3 or 4 years as far as changes in innovation?
Well, there's a lot of stuff happening. I mean, I think Tesla is probably the biggest developer of technology, and they push boundaries further and faster than everybody else does. Everybody wants longer range. Well, people want the same things out of electric cars that they do out of gas cars. They want more power, more range, smoother, more performance, better economy, lower cost of operation and all that stuff. So technology is pushing all electric vehicles in that direction. But we are seeing larger batteries now become pretty mainstream. So yeah, essentially what that means is that there is a market for used cars that are yesterday's technology. Like the Nissan Leaf is a classic example. You know, it's got the smallest production battery of any electric car that's on the road today, the 24 kilowatt hour battery, which isn't huge. However, people find that they're extremely useful, even when they're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old and they have a somewhat diminished range. There's still a market for those things. So the new tech costs more money than old tech. However, there's a place in the market for every unit, whether it's new or used.
Interesting. And so you've been in this industry for a really long time. What would you say, talking about those original Leafs and the decline in their range and their performance compared to the new ones that are coming off the lot? Are you seeing a similar trend in depreciation for those EV vehicles as compared to, say, a internal combustion engine vehicle that's 8 years old? Is the trend line similar or different on the depreciation? Like, what's your thoughts?
It has been wildly unpredictable. It was funny. I just took a bus stop ad out of Souk. I had a bus stop ad that was advertising 2014 Nissan Leaf base models for $17,900. Ironically, we have to sell the same car for more, even though my ad that was advertising those things at $17,900 went up almost 2 years ago. So the pricing has been holding steady on those, which I couldn't have predicted. I thought it would have continued to drop at a rate of 15% to 20% per year. But the demand is really, really high and inventory is pretty low. So the retail prices on these things and wholesale, of course, is a little bit higher than what we would have expected. So depreciation in this particular geographic area is better than we anticipated.
Wow, that's amazing. And yeah. I also want to give a shout out here to Kayla Jenkins, who just went from a standard, you know, internal combustion gas powered vehicle to a EV recently. I think
nice.
She picked up a newer Kia Soul.
Way to go, Kayla. The Soul is awesome.
Whip, if you ask me. So I want to ask you, Kay, I'm going to tee this up for you. Are you ready?
Yeah. Hit me.
Julian, what are the ABCs of electric car ownership?
Oh, thank you for asking, Braden. Always be charging. You know, it sounds kind of funny, but it's true. It's just like the way that we treat our cell phones. You know, you plug it in every night, you expect it to be full and serve you well throughout the course of the day, much like your cell phone. If you forget to charge it at night, you're going to have problems, so please don't. We expect everybody to charge at every opportunity. If you have a huge battery, you don't need to charge so much. So somebody driving a Tesla P100, you know, they have a usable range of 400 to 500 kilometers, but you know, people like you and me that have smaller batteries, we're going to take advantage of charging, whether we're at public facilities like parkades or, you know, if you're going to the movie theater, plug it in. You're going downtown for lunch, plug it in. ABC, always be charging.
Always be charging, which is a nice nice change from the always be closing sales mantra.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and true story, and sorry to throw you under the bus, my dear, but Mandy was supposed to plug the car in last night, didn't, and I woke up this morning to a almost completely dead EV, but anyways, I've got
a range. That is a great feeling,
eh? All good. Yeah. It's all good. Anyways, she doesn't watch this show, so she won't know that I just threw under the bus. Okay, I want you to actually, before we talk about real estate-specific vehicles and practicality and all that, can you just walk us through the basics, because I get asked the questions all the time, both from my colleagues as well as people who stop me at the charging stations, like, how does it work? I see these different charging stations around town. Like, can you just give us, as best you can, your electric car ownership 101 so that we can set the baseline before we move on to the next part?
I'll do the 2-minute crash course here. Yeah. So essentially, people looking at EVs are looking for reasons to make a switch, and also looking for any potential reasons why they wouldn't want to make a switch. Essentially, what you need to know before you buy an electric vehicle or an EV is how much your daily range expectation is. So anytime I sit with a client and we talk about switching from an internal combustion engine to an EV, we want to talk about daily range. And most of the cars out there are really suitable for people who have daily range requirements, 100 kilometers or less. However, if you're willing and able to plug in during the day, whether you pick up a level 2, which is 240, or a level 3, which is a DC fast charge, you can extend your daily range quite a bit. So doing a 200 or 300 kilometer day is no problem in an EV, but it does require a little bit of planning because it's a 30-minute quick charge as opposed to a 3-minute, 4-minute fuel stop. So essentially, they are
Your phone blowing up?
No, my phone is asking me if I want to change my Apple password, and it's like,
no,
maybe not right now.
Siri, no. Not now.
Thank you. But essentially, range requirements. Yeah, it's like when you're shopping for a house, you know, don't buy a 2-bedroom house if you need 5. EVs are suitable for most people who do the average amount of driving. Average Canadians drive about 20 to 35 kilometers per day on average. Yeah. So even the lowest range EV will easily meet the needs of most consumers. But having that hard discussion about what actual range requirements mean, like how do you define your range requirements? How often do you leave town? How far do you go when you leave town? These questions need to be discussed up front. And then we can accurately determine whether an EV is going to be suitable. But integrating an EV into somebody's lifestyle is quite simple, as you know.
Yeah, and so I analyze my kilometers, and so I no longer work in the day-to-day sales side. I work more in management. So my driving is to and from the office for the most part, maybe grocery store, you know, rec center, etc. And I drive an average of 30 kilometers a day. Speaking with some of my colleagues leading up to this interview, the average that I seemed to pinpoint was about 80 kilometers a day. But some told me, you know, over a couple hundred kilometers. And I suppose if you're a buyer's agent and you're showing homes all over the core and West Shore and out to Souk, that's definitely a possibility. But, you know, we're not delivery drivers at the end of the day. So I think it's a possibility for sure. I have a bunch of different standard questions I want to walk you through. So let's talk about the level of charging. So my understanding is there's three different levels. You know, from our wall socket to the level two that we see at the mall to the supercharger. Can you give us the crash course in that?
Yeah, it's really simple. So level one is 120 volts. That's the slowest way to charge a vehicle, but it does give EV owners access to a charge no matter where they are. If you can see power lines, you've got your fuel station available. Level one takes about, you get 10 kilometers of range for each hour you're plugged in. So it's painfully slow, but in a pinch, it'll get you there. And if you have an overnight charging opportunity where there is no proper EV charger, level one will have you filled up by the morning, so you've got a full charge. Level two is 240 volt, which is ideally what we like to charge EVs with because it's about five times faster, not just double the voltage, but it's also quite a bit more amperage as well. So instead of 12 amps, most of the EVs like yours and mine will consume 30 amps. So level two charging is what we see all over the neighborhoods, rec centers and parkades and everything else. And that's the primary means of charging an EV. Most EVs also accept level three charging or CHAdeMO or CCS combos, a couple of different standards used. And instead of using an onboard charger and converting AC power into DC in the car, using equipment that's in the car, these DC fast chargers look like a refrigerator on the roadside. And they are a big charging unit that puts DC power straight into the battery without going through power components in the car. And that just means you can put more power in less time into the battery. And that gives you about a 30-minute fill-up time.
And so obviously you say power, if there's power lines, you're heading towards a level one charger. I think that's a great way of looking at it.
Yeah.
And then I've also been shocked at how many level two chargers there are around, you know, the greater, you know, the Victoria, West Shore and all of that.
They're everywhere.
And for the most part, generally they're free to access.
For the most part. That is going to change though.
I'm sure it will.
Yeah. The BC Utilities Commission right now is investigating how people can sell power. And right now, some level two stations are switching over to a fee or service-based system. So you pay a service fee or an access fee to hook up. But nobody that's not a utility is allowed to sell power. So right now they're free, but probably not for long.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the level three charging, the supercharge, you pay for that service because that's coming right from BC Hydro.
Yeah, you do pay for that service. The utility BC Hydro does own all the level three chargers, but I have to make a slight correction. The term supercharger applies to Tesla. Tesla supercharger is a name that just applies to Tesla chargers. So, and it's commonly used to describe level three charging, but it is a little bit different. Tesla has their own chargers that only work with Tesla vehicles. There's a setup in Nanaimo. And they usually have between 4 and 10 stalls at any given supercharger location. And they are specifically for putting DC power into Tesla vehicles. And they're considerably more powerful than the level three chargers that your car and my car use. BC Hydro owns all the level three DC fast charge stations that are currently installed in British Columbia. Actually, that's not true. There's one at the Volkswagen dealer that's top secret that's not owned by BC Hydro.
We won't talk about it.
It's a secret. You're going to start to see level three chargers installed at a lot of different car dealerships like Porsche and Audi and Land Rover and all sorts of other things. You're going to see those pop up. But BC Hydro owns all the public stuff.
And you're right about the dealerships like Harborview Volkswagen in Nanaimo, where I've been a happy customer for a couple of years when I was buying diesels there. They just did a huge retrofit of their whole dealership, and they put charging stations in with it.
Yeah.
So Kirsten Martin here, one of the agents in our office, says she loves her new Tesla, saves about $800 to $1,000 a month in gas, little to no maintenance, and clients are always thinking it's cool. And constant air controlled AC, which would be really nice this time of year. So that's fantastic. So you've given us the lay of the land for charging stations and for charge times. I want to ask you about general range of vehicles. So you talked about the old Leafs and how they work, but like, can you give us a bit of a landscape? Like, if you're buying an electric vehicle today, what can you expect in terms of range, total capacity?
There's quite a variance. I mean, at the bottom of the line, we've got stuff like the new 2018 or 2019 Smart EV. Now, Smart, as you may or may not know, probably not the ideal realtor's vehicle, but they actually discontinued gas cars. They're only producing electric cars now, and they have a range of about 100 kilometers. So that would be your entry level EV. The new Leaf has a 40 kilowatt hour battery. It'll get you over 200, maybe closer to 250, 260 kilometers on one charge. And then we've got some exciting new products hitting the market from Kia and Hyundai this year. They have some, I'm going to call them a micro SUV. They look big in photos, but they're actually tiny. But they're a little SUV crossover thing. Now, you're going to see about 400 kilometers range in the biggest battery option from those guys. So as of September of this year, you can walk into a dealership, spend probably 50 grand or slightly less, and get a car that'll get you 400K on a charge, which is quite substantial. You know, cars like what you drive, the i3, they're usually somewhere in 120 to 140 range in the summertime. That's for the previous generation battery. The brand new i3s will probably take you closer to 250 on a charge. And I think every manufacturer is working on bigger and bigger batteries. So within the next 12 months, the normal new electric vehicle range for even just a basic consumer car, regardless of body style, is probably going to be in the 300 to 400 range.
Mm-hmm.
Which would more than meet the needs.
And you said something interesting there about when you're referencing my vehicle in the summer. So this is something I've learned. I've now spent four seasons with my EV. And,
has it been four?
Yeah, four seasons. So I bought it from you last summer. And
yes.
And yeah, so I've gone through spring, fall, winter, you know, summer, et cetera.
Yeah. Big
and,
difference in range.
There's a big difference in range. So can you talk about batteries? And first I want to ask you about battery changes in the climate, so summer versus winter, what you typically see. And then I also want to ask you about the degradation of batteries long term, because they do get worse over time. So let's start with the seasonal question. What can a standard EV expect to gain or lose, the difference between the coldest winter months and the hottest summer months?
Well, it's a great question. So battery temperature definitely affects the amount of energy that the battery can hold. So if you don't drive your EV much, you know, maybe you only drive 10, 15, 20K a day or something like that, you're going to see a big loss in range on the vehicle, but it's probably not going to have a huge effect because you don't need a lot of range. However, we're going to say 25% loss of usable range difference. So between 5 degrees Celsius and 20 degrees Celsius, you're about 25%. There's a noticeable difference between hot and cold climates. However, there's other factors that make a big difference with respect to driving an EV. So, you know, on a cold December day where it's 5 degrees out, but you've got clean, dry roads, your car is going to do pretty well. If it's a day where there's a lot of standing water on the road and you've got torrential downpours coming down and you've got to leave your heat on all the time so you don't fog up the glass, you're going to use way more power. So you're going to see your biggest loss in range when you've got poor weather conditions and standing water or slush or snow or something on the roads. You're really going to pay the price. Ironically, it's the problem with loss of range is amplified in an EV because they don't have a lot of range to begin with. But the efficiency factor is about the same as a gas car. Gas cars do really poorly in rainy condition, and they use a lot more energy than you would expect. But the fuel tanks in gas cars are so big, you don't really notice. You just fill up one or two days earlier. So you pay the price.
I remember the first month that I had mine, and then the whole concept of range anxiety. And I would say it is a real thing. I barely kept my eyes on the road because I was watching the battery deplete as I was driving the whole time. And then after about 30 days, I realized I wasn't ever going to get stranded anywhere. I just stopped caring about it because I just knew I'm, you know, ABCs always be charging. There was charging stations everywhere. I kept finding more and more of them close to my office, close to my house, where I play tennis, etc. and life was good again. I want to ask you about driving experience, because I have the BMW i3 model, which is a lot of fun to drive. And then, well, we won't get into all the details of the story right now, but I had to send my car away to get fixed. And then I was kind enough to get loaned a Leaf for about a month. And I could tell you that the experience between the two was night and day. The BMW drove like a sporty, peppy car. The Leaf felt like I was driving a pillow. Those are the only two EVs I've ever driven. So, like, what's the landscape of driving performance? Because, you know, as realtors, we spend a lot of time in our cars, and we want to have fun behind the wheel as well.
Well, just a useful tidbit, well, maybe useless tidbit of information. The i3 actually accelerates harder from 0 to 60 kilometers an hour than an M5. So, wow. Yeah, I know why you have fun, because those things haul ass. They're great.
Hey, now, this is a family program, Julian, okay?
They haul the hay.
Yeah, sure. You know what? Haul ass works.
The i3 is a lot of fun. You know, I mean, the BMW brands itself as a company that builds the ultimate driving machine, and they're not joking. Every car they make has character and has soul, and you feel like you're driving something special when you get behind the wheel. Everything from the way the steering wheel is constructed and the way it feels in your hands to the dash layout, everything is awesome. It's a good car. The Leaf is a little bit different. The Leaf is an acronym. It stands for Leading Environmentally Friendly Affordable Family Vehicle. That's the L-E-A-F. Now, so it wasn't really intended to be a spirited driving machine. It's just a grocery getter. But having said that, when I get out of a Leaf and I end up driving a gas car around, you know, doing a demo for a customer or something, taking a trade-in, whatever, and then I get back in the Leaf, man, I can't believe how much I miss EVs when I'm out of one for a day or two. So I think...
So on the scale of... Is Leaf like the far side of the scale, as you say, the grocery getter, family mobile, and the i3, and obviously the Tesla even more so... Like, where's the landscape like for Kia, the Hyundai, all the other EVs that you see? Is it pretty consistent?
No, it's not. There's a lot of difference in the character and the performance of these vehicles. They're definitely not all the same. I mean, Tesla's base model car makes 4 times more power than a Leaf. So any Tesla that you get into is going to be a pretty magnificent ride. They have a lot of power, a lot of torque, and a lot of range. They're a seriously major... It's a heavy-duty, professional quality car. The Leaf is built to a price point, though. I mean, when Nissan engineered that thing, they had to put a price tag on it before they built the car. So it's built to a price. Tesla's really not. Everything else in the market, like a Fiat 500 electric, a Smart electric, and pretty much all the regular runarounds, like a Mercedes B250 electric and all these other grocery getter cars, they're fine. They actually accelerate quite nicely. They make tons of torque. And they're great to drive. I think maybe the spirit is kind of missing in a lot of electric cars because they're not exciting to drive. There's no sound of an exciting engine. So, you know, if you get a customer that gets out of something fun that has a growly exhaust, like an Infiniti, you know, sedan or something that really sounds great when you put your foot in it, people will get into an EV and think, oh, well, there's no sound, there's no character. Yeah. Electric cars kind of grow on people, and once you start to spend a little bit of time, like you said, it took you a month, then you can't be without it, even though you're missing the sound and some of the character that people get accustomed to, especially people who love cars, who are in them all the time. We've learned to love our cars.
I love
EVs for a lot of reasons, but I am missing the sound of a gas car, I gotta be honest.
I hear you, and it is funny, the driving experience difference between any EV and the gas-powered vehicles, because occasionally I rent a vehicle if I'm traveling or something, and then getting behind the wheel of a gas-powered car is almost like I have to relearn how to brake again, because I'm so spoiled with regenerative
braking and
all that. So.
Well, and throttle response is a big deal. Like, electric cars have instantaneous throttle response. We get spoiled.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you get out of any electric car, I don't care what it is or how fast it is, you're used to instantaneous throttle response. You jump in a gas car, you hit the accelerator, and now you have to wait, and it seems like there's something wrong with the car.
Totally.
Even though there's not.
Yeah. I want to ask you about home charging setup, and so we're going to take a bit of a different perspective. So obviously, a lot of realtors who are going to watch this are watching it because they're interested in maybe getting an EV themselves. But the reality is, I'm also hearing that a lot of their clients, you know, future buyers of homes, are asking about EV setup. So, you know, I understand you sell different charging apparatus at Motorize.
Yeah.
What's the basic fundamentals? Like, if I'm showing a buyer a house and it's a 1970s home with a 100-amp panel that's jammed to the hilt, like, What are the options? What are the things that we need to be aware of as realtors to look for if we're going to put an electric charging station in our own house or if our clients want to put one in their own?
Well, it's a great question, and I'm sure it's a topic that gets brought up a lot because not only are clients looking at the possibility of integrating an electric car into their purchase or into their lifestyle shortly after purchase, but a lot of people are talking about solar as well. So the electrical capacity of a house is definitely something that needs to be considered. And, you know, there's a lot of houses on the island here that have 100-amp panels, which is just not suitable for charging an electric car. If push comes to shove, we do have chargers that can be dialed down and only draw 20 amps. But we got to be legal and keep everything within code. So ultimately, most consumers that are buying a house with a 100-amp panel should be looking at doing an upgrade to a 200-amp panel, which is probably going to cost a few thousand bucks. But maybe you're going to throw in a heat pump or a hot tub or who knows what. So probably not a bad plan.
Right. Okay. So you think that a 100-amp panel in pretty much any house is not going to be sufficient. We're going to be looking at upgrading. If you look at a house with a 200-amp panel, I guess it would probably be bad to assume that it's going to be okay because maybe that panel is totally loaded up as well. But
sometimes they are.
Yeah.
Sometimes they are. And if a panel, you know, if you're showing a customer a house and it's got a 200-amp panel and you look at it and it doesn't have any empty spaces on it, then yeah, you're looking at a sub panel or you're looking at a new device which can share. It's called a load manager. Yeah. There are devices that will monitor load on some other circuits, like maybe look at a dryer and a hot tub and a few other circuits and only allow the car to charge when those other circuits aren't pulling energy out of it.
Clever.
So the way electrical code works, you can't exceed 80% of the value of the panel at any given time. But sometimes you can add an extra circuit that would exceed that as long as you have a load manager to make sure it actually monitors the load and doesn't allow that 80% threshold to be crossed. So you do have options.
Okay. And the last thing I want to ask you about the basics, the ABCs here of EV ownership is about EV etiquette. Now, I didn't know this was a thing until I came into your dealership and you kind of explained to me. But like when you think of EV etiquette, what comes to mind?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of people buy EVs and they have no instruction whatsoever. So we run into little traffic jams at charging stations. Now, it's one thing to run into a traffic jam at Costco when there's a low gas price and people are okay to wait in line for 20 minutes to get their fuel. But at a charging station, each vehicle can take, you know, if at a fast charge station, it's 30 minutes. If it's a level two station, sometimes people hang out for an hour or two. Well, when you get a lineup and people are waiting 2 hours to charge, you're going to end up with frustrated customers really quick. So EV etiquette basically is something that needs to be considered. So people, for example, if somebody's got a Tesla and they have 300 kilometers range in their battery, that person shouldn't really be sitting at a public charger when there's a Leaf there who's only got 10 kilometers worth of range left. So we need to take a bit of a community approach and make sure that we're conscious of who's driving what. You know, yeah. A person that's got a Chevrolet Volt, they can run on electric or gas power. So if a consumer is driving a Volt and pulls up to a charge station, they've already got a full tank of fuel and a bit of charge, but they want to top up. But there's a family with, you know, tired kids in the back who are just trying to get home in their Leaf. The Leaf owner can't go anywhere without a charge. The Volt owner can. So how badly people need charge depends on what they're driving. So we have to have a bit of a community discussion and actually keep in mind that some people need charge more than others because these charging stations aren't designed to charge more than one car at the same time. So we have to triage charging responsibilities.
Okay, that's very, very helpful information. Now, I want to ask you specifically about real estate agents. I mean, you know, I was actually introduced to you through Tony Joe, who was our last week's guest. I know you've networked and sold a number of vehicles to realtors over the past few years. So knowing what's available, both new inventory and pre-owned inventory, what would you say are the top couple models that a real estate agent who wants to become a more of an early adopter in this, they probably drive 80 to 100 kilometers a day. What models would you be recommending?
Well, there's a couple considerations to take into effect. And of course, price has to be considered as well. So a lot of realtors are going to be picking up people and hauling them all around the city. If that's the case and you're using your vehicle as a bit of a shuttle, then perhaps a Tesla Model S would be the most suitable choice because you get long range, lots of passenger comfort. It's a bit of a luxury ride, super quiet, and you can pretty much go anywhere you want and you'll never have to inconvenience your client by waiting at a charger.
And what are we looking at price point for that, so on the pre-owned market?
Yeah, in the pre-owned market, they're $60,000 and up, basically. I will say that they only sit on the market for a day or two, usually. They get bought up really, really quickly. And for $60,000, you can get a 2012 Model S with about 100,000K on it.
And how far the range would a battery have that age?
They'll go about 400K.
Okay.
That's Tesla's
actually more affordable than I was thinking, you know, you could get into that Model S for.
Yeah, they're quite good. And those batteries are liquid cooled. They don't really seem to take much of a beating. They've been really reliable over the long course of ownership on these things. And mileage doesn't really affect battery life in these things. It's more charge cycles and calendar aging that affects battery life. So the used Teslas are an excellent purchase.
Okay.
But if
what
you don't
would be number two on your list?
Number two would be a Leaf. Assuming you're going pure electric. Now, there's also gas hybrids as well that have, or we'll call them plug-in hybrids or extended range plug-ins. That's a whole different kettle of fish. But the Leaf is a pretty popular car for quite a number of different business professionals that we cater to anyway. They seat five people. They're quite comfortable. And they have a usable range between 100 and 150K with the basic size battery and those things. So they're pretty common as well. But
okay. Price point-wise on something like that?
20 to 30 is pretty normal on those. Okay. Sometimes they dip a little under 20. It depends on year and mileage and all that stuff.
So if we wanted, I imagine, just like any make a car, they probably have higher level trim and nicer, yep, more luxurious. So if we want to step down from the 60 to 80K Tesla to a nicer Leaf with more range, like what would that be? Can we spend $40,000 on a Leaf?
Yeah, you can. If you buy a new 2018 Leaf that's got a 40 kilowatt hour battery that'll get you over 200 kilometers on one charge, and you buy one with a vinyl interior, they say it's leather, but it's actually vinyl. slightly vegan. They're about $40,000 for a new one.
Okay. And rounding out your list, number three, what comes to mind as far as what you'd recommend for a real estate agent to use in their business?
You know, another really good one right now, well, we've already discussed the i3, which is, I think, is awesome. However, the i3 only seats four, and some people need five seats depending on who you're loading and what you need for, anyway. But the Volkswagen e-Golf is an excellent car. It's a five-seat station wagon built in Germany, really cool car. And they'll go a little over 200K on one charge, but there's a one-year wait time on those.
Yeah. Well, and that's how I became a customer of yours. I had my fourth Volkswagen on pre-order, and I was just waiting and waiting and waiting. And then I met you and walked out of the dealership with an i3.
There you go. Never looked back.
That's fantastic. So that gives us a good landscape. I'm surprised to hear that the Tesla you can get into one for about 60K. I want to just ask you, really, at this point in time, just about your prediction. Like, where do you see, you have some of the huge automakers saying they're going to be fully electric or like 50% electric only in a short while away. Like, what do you see in the landscape of EVs over the next 3 to 5 years?
3 to 5 years is kind of hard to predict. We're in a really awkward place in the automotive marketplace because the whole automotive marketplace is based on service. That they make as much money on service as they do on sales, and so there's a bit of a problem if you look at the sales process. If a consumer walks into a dealership and buys an electric car today, and then they have a growing family and they need to tow stuff and they need a bigger vehicle, if they go back to the dealer and they can't buy another electric vehicle, then that consumer is going to become a Tesla customer when they need a bigger vehicle. So the dealership, instead of selling them a Micra and then a Sentra and then an Altima and then a Maxima and then a Frontier, they lose them. You know, right. Somebody buys a Leaf, they drive it for a couple of years. Anyway, so the sales flow is kind of screwed up, and car manufacturers want to sell EVs, they're going to sell EVs, and they're adding to their lineups all the time. But we're at this awkward stage right now where manufacturers don't know how to make the transition without disappointing their shareholders. Because when you sell a consumer an EV, you lose the service and the parts because these things barely break. So you're cutting the manufacturers by introducing more electric vehicles are doing the right thing for the consumer and the environment, but they're technically doing the wrong thing for their dealerships because they're not helping their dealerships stay profitable. So until all the manufacturers start to really get heavy into EVs and, you know, willingly cut their service and parts profits out of the picture for a market share in new EV sales, it's going to be this weird gray area that nobody wants to go into.
It's an interesting time for sure.
It is, yeah.
It's going to be, I can see some of the big automakers being crippled under this new model and, you know, emerging companies as well. I mean, Tesla wasn't really an everyday household name, you know, even maybe 5 years ago, but definitely not 10 years ago. The average person didn't know what a Tesla was.
No idea.
So, it's pretty exciting. And speaking of the maintenance side, I just wanted to throw this out there because I've thanked you before, but I just want to put it on the record how appreciative I am because I was one of those very few statistical outliers where my EV actually broke. And I took it to the BMW dealership and they said, you know, words that were supposed to be comforting, but they really weren't, which was, we've never seen this before, which led to a part from Germany having to come in, this and that, whatever thing. So I bought my vehicle pre-owned. It was the first one, a used vehicle I've had in a long time. I've always had skepticism around that because I've always leased brand new and everything gets fixed. Anyways, I bought it from you guys, not a BMW dealership. And what did you guys do? You flipped me the keys to a Nissan Leaf for as long as I needed it, which I think ended up being like 5 weeks. So I just want to say how much I appreciate your customer service and your willingness to help your EV community out.
Well, customer service goes a long way. I've been doing business in this town for a long time, and I've realized that if I look after my customers, they keep coming back. So I'm always going to look after
Or they'll invite you on their show.
Yeah, right on.
Anyways, man, no, I invited you on because you are definitely the expert in this and you guys have a great business. I'm happy to be a customer of yours and hopefully some of the people watching will become customers of yours here, if not this year, in the years coming. So thanks so much, man. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, we really appreciate the opportunity. Thanks a lot, Braden.
Awesome, man. Take care. Enjoy that McDonald's coffee.
It's cold now.
Okay. Iced coffee. They charge more for that.
That's right. See thanks you, a lot. Take care.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. We have Julian Sale here from Motorized out in Sydney. I have to tell you, you can probably tell I'm a pretty happy customer of theirs. One of the things from a values perspective, I've always believed that giving starts the receiving process. That's a Richard Robbins coaching philosophy as well. I also think that education is the highest form of sales. And that was one of the things that I noticed when I walked into their dealership was their willingness to sit down and educate me. And I had a lot of objections. I was very skeptical, all of that sort of stuff. And by the time they, you know, let me test drive a bunch of vehicles and answered all my questions and got back to me, I was sold. So and now over a year later, I'm super thrilled and wouldn't go back. So hopefully you found this episode of value, a little bit of a departure from some of the heavy stuff we've been covering the last month with the new rule changes. Now we're taking a break. I'm going to go work on my tan a little bit and also create a bunch of new pieces to this show's infrastructure. We're going to be launching not just the video format come September, but also an audio and a podcast format because I'm getting a lot of people talking about how much time they spend in their cars and they can't watch video, but they would definitely listen to this in an audio format. So that's coming. We're working now with a new graphic designer, videographer. We're building the team so we can try to create some really great content for you guys to engage with and provide you with ongoing value. So with all that being said, 27 episodes into this show, I just want to say thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. And I hope you guys have an awesome rest of your summer. All right, guys, that's all for now. Take care.